Lloyd, I've known you forever.
Forever.
You've got a book, T-Bone Burnett, A Life in Pursuit.
And, you know, I've spent my whole life writing this book.
It is on University of Texas Press.
Right.
And so tell me why you picked T-Bone Burnett.
Well, you know, I've known him for a while. I've always loved him as a character and as a person and as an artist. And in fact, I was actually pitching another book, one that I thought was going to be a slam dunk that ended up getting turned down. And they came to me and said, "We hear there's a rumor you have a T-Bone Burnett book in you." And, of course, I said, "Yes, of course I do." I had written a long cover story on him for No Depression magazine. And you know, just one of the kind of driving factors in writing this book is to give recognition to the fact of just what a great singer and songwriter he was and remains when he wants to be, because a lot of people know him, you know, as a legendary producer. He's always referred to as legendary, visionary, you know, the guy in the studio. But surprisingly, I've just run into people that it's amazed me that they didn't know that he recorded such great albums as Truth Decay and T-Bone Burnett, that acoustic album he recorded in L.A., that's kind of religious, you know, overtones, and The Criminal Under My Own Hat. This guy was, you know, Rolling Stone one year named him the best singer, songwriter in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of got me going.
What was your introduction to him? When did you first come across him?
I first came across him actually probably over the phone. I, you know, did a couple of pieces for the Sun-Times in advance of when he was still performing. He appeared at Park West, actually, with backing Sam Phillips, his wife at the time, who's a wonderful singer and songwriter. And he later did some stuff at Steppenwolf as part of their lamented Traffic series.
Yeah, right.
One of those shows was with Sam Shepard.
Yeah, right.
And I just, you know, got to know him and hung out with him a little bit. And I just really enjoyed being around him.
What was the process like of trying to get him involved and then him not getting involved? And from a biographer's point of view, what are the benefits and drawbacks of having the participation or non-participation of the subject?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, and most people assume that if you don't have the guy talking to you, then the book is going to suffer as a result. And perhaps a certain kind of book would have suffered, but I really set out to do a kind of critical biography, kind of an overview of all his work and appreciation of his work as both a singer-songwriter and a producer and also, you know, an activist for recorded sound. And I first approached him when he was appearing with Robert Plant and Alison Krauss
right,
at Ravinia.
Right, yeah.
He had produced their incredible album, Raising Sand, which his name should be on equally. It should be by the three of them because he was that significant a contributor to that album. And I was backstage, and it was probably not the greatest time or place to approach him. He was all sweaty, and I just went up and broached the idea of this book, and he immediately got kind of skittish, and he referred me to his money guy back in L.A., and subsequent attempts to kind of get him on the phone by email, he has a wonderful impression of Houdini that he does, and it was just at finally, after a long period of time, he got back to me and he said, you know, that he just really wasn't into looking backward. He had too much he still wanted to do, yeah. And he's as Sam Phillips, said to me, he just is, you know, not happy, especially as he gains in years. He's going to be 70 and not too long, of just the idea of confronting his mortality.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, but the answer to the key question there is, I I was unhappy for a while that he wasn't going to participate, but the more I got into writing the book, the more I felt like I was able to shape it in my own way. There was plenty of T-Bone out, you know, on the internet, and a lot of interviews out there where he says a whole bunch of stuff. Plus, I had, you know, various interviews with him of my own that I could draw upon. And I just think it came out pretty well. And actually, towards the end, when, by the way, he did jump in and help me get photographs for the book,
I heard that. Yeah.
Which was just really generous of him. And by the way, he let me talk to everybody around him, all the people who were close to him, which was just a great thing, including, you know, Sam Phillips and Joe Henry, who's his protege. Yeah. And so by the end, I was actually thinking, if I got a call from him saying, Lloyd, I decided I'd like to talk to you for the book, I don't know what decision I would have made at this point. It would have been hard to say, no, T-Bone, you know, the gate has come down on that.
Well, I would think as a biographer, I'd rather do a book without participation. I think it's a more honest book. I mean, you know, I guess it depends on who the subject is, but I would not want a manager reading the manuscript and approving stuff and stuff
like
that.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I would have gone for that.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, and with the bigger... You know, the bigger tell-all biographies, and I'm not sure T-Bone really, there was a market for that book with him. It does, you know, revolve around money, and it does revolve around things that don't have to do with the narrative or the work, you know. And so, you know, it's all a moot point, and I would have loved, you know, the one reason I would have loved his participation was it would have been great hanging out with him and having him play, you know, play me all the stuff and giving me a guided tour of his vast, vast musical knowledge.
Yeah. I want listeners to know a little bit about your own background. I mean, you were a jazz critic at the Sun-Times. Tell me about your background in movie reviews and at least.
I reviewed films at the Sun-Times as well. I was kind of the guy with the broom behind Roger Ebert. No, that's not quite true. There was a lot of good stuff that Roger just didn't have the time to do. But I did. I wrote about films and music for the Sun-Times, pop music as well as jazz. I reviewed films on WXRT, Sax
and the Cinema.
Some listeners will remember, and I forever credit Bob Shulman, a DJ at the time, who came up with that name. And if you're young, you may not know that was a play on the Playboy, their recurring Playboy feature, Sax and the Cinema. But anyway, and I've just written for a whole bunch of publications.
So I asked that because the views you have, the cinema views, and maybe the rhythms of jazz, did that play into the way you put this book together, especially the cinema stuff?
That's a really interesting – I mean, I'm not sure I was conscious of that, but T-Bone, in a way, is very visual in his approach. And I would say the book definitely has a musical structure. And I have to say, the first version I did of the book, when I showed to a mutual friend of ours, Mike Lenihan, former editor of mine at The Reader, and I kind of the look on his face, he was very nice. He didn't come out and say that it was a mess. But it was a little kind of all over the place. And I took the book back and I did a significant rewrite, which was not the last, and I really settled on this formula for writing the book, which he had an album out one of the last albums he recorded was called The True False Identity, and my notion for my book, I originally called it The True Identities, and each of the chapters represents a kind of a different dimension of his talent, because he's, you know, so many people to, you know, he's just there are so many dimensions to him as a producer and as a Svengali for Sam Phillips. You know, he was a member of Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review as a member of the band. he formed his own band called the Alpha Band, which was very religious-minded, coming out of the Rolling Thunder experience. But he's also, you know, produced blues artists like B.B. King and Willie Dixon. And he's produced jazz artists like Cassandra Wilson and Diana Krall and Tony Bennett, who I don't consider a jazz artist, but we'll throw him in there anyway. But so I just ended up coming up with that kind of approach where they're pretty short chapters and they kind of gain a certain momentum as you go through the various roles that he's played.
We're going to play a little music here after we take a break for some commercials. So thanks for joining us, Lloyd. Don't go away on WGN's Nocturnal Journal.
There's a river of love that runs through all time. There's a river of grief.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN with our friend Lloyd Sachs, who wrote the book T-Bone Burnett, A Life in Pursuit on University of Texas Press. Tell us about that track.
Well, River of Love is one of his just real enduring compositions. It's from an album called T-Bone Burnett, which is very spare, as you can tell. It was recorded very quickly in L.A., but it had a Nashville kind of feeling to it. Comes some really killer musicians on that album, including David Hidalgo of Los Lobos. And it was really at a period when this is probably the most straightforward album T-Bone has ever recorded. It was stripped down. He got caught up in his desire to become a commercial success, which he never was. He got caught up in the studio in overproducing a lot of his stuff and over-tweaking. And the albums in which he did that the least and which he had the least time and money to use are actually ended up being his strongest efforts. And this one has a very strong religious component to it. And you know, he was tagged a born-again artist, which to a certain extent may account for his – a lot of people kind of went away from him instead of, you know, treating him like a Warren Zevon or Jackson Browne in terms of giving him a shot at, you know, commercial success.
It's interesting if you're – it's an interesting read if you're interested in how a record is made. He reminds me – some stuff in there reminds me of our friend Lou Whitney, late Lou Whitney, about – I think T-Bone says everything starts with the song. Lou always told me that the band, the Skeletons and the Morels, they were defenders of the song. Is that – I mean, so he built from the song outward?
Well, T-Bone, you know, he underwent a certain evolution as a producer, but – He was always – he had a term that he used about listening a song into existence, where he didn't bring preconceived notions to the studio. He let the band basically find themselves or the artists find themselves, and he worked to bring them out the best way he could. You know, Daniel Lanois, who's a wonderful producer – is one of those producers who leaves a very particular – he leaves a signature
sure,
on his work.
Yeah.
You always know it's a Daniel Lanois album from the sound, that very kind of echoey electronic effect thing, which if you have Emmylou Harris's Wrecking Ball or Bob Dylan's Time Out of Mind, those are Daniel Lanois productions. And for T-Bone – And Lanois would speak about them in those terms, like, I wanted to do this on this album. I was really trying to do the best work. I was trying to create a masterpiece. You would never hear T-Bone talk in those terms because it was always about the artists and about the community of players that came together to make music.
Did you put together – did I see somewhere – did you put together a Spotify list? Or, I mean, again, for listeners, this might be new to them.
Oh, that would be great.
John Mellencamp, Life, Death, Love, and Freedom. I know he did the Bodines. Tell us about his wide reach. You know, you have a discography here in the back of the book.
But. Well, I actually did put together a playlist, an annotated playlist you can find on the University of Texas Press site. And I believe if you go on Spotify, it's called – T-Bone on tour or touring T-Bone. I can't remember what it's called. My New York accent is T-O-U-R-I-N-G, touring T-Bone. And, you know, he's all, you know, all over the place. He did an album by Betty Buckley, who's best known for her very pronounced vocals in the Broadway musical Cat. He's produced, you know, Los Lobos, Elvis Costello, the great Gillian Welch, Jimmy Dale Gilmore.
Yeah.
He did an album with Jimmy Dale Gilmore that had everyone in Texas kind of shaking their head because it was so different from what Jimmy had ever done before. Jimmy kind of he was a poster boy for alt country for a while. And all of a sudden, he's taking turns with these kind of electric raga effects and this acid blues, like, you know, and great album called Braver, Newer World.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And so there's, you know, recently people were shaking their head again when he produced Steven Tyler. And he ended up being one of several producers on that album. But when the word came out that he was doing Steven Tyler, you know, coming off his American Idol sort of heyday, where people go, what is he doing that for?
Before we go, tell people how they can find the book.
Well, it's available on all the basic sites. It's on Amazon, and you can buy it off the University of Texas Press site. And it's in the stores. I just did a reading at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston. Wonderful people up there can sell you a copy.
That's good. Has he seen the book?
I don't know if he's seen the book or his representatives have, but I got a little bit of feedback back, but I don't know.
Okay. Thanks, Lloyd.
Thank you.